Good morning. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, whoever you love, we welcome you. My name is Justin Chekai, and I seem to not be able to stand anywhere without getting blocked. I am the worship associate here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. I am joined today by our guest minister, Matthew McHale, the beautiful Karen Lupitas, director of religious education, and the ever-talented Hal Walker, director of music. Our guest minister today, like I said, is Matthew McHale. He's the intern minister at the West Shore Unitarian Universalist Church in Rocky River. He's in his final semester at the Star King School for the Ministry. Matthew's from California and grew up in the Unitarian Universalist Church of Long Beach. He's deeply committed to ecological justice, anti-racism, and anti-oppression work. So we welcome Matthew this morning. Our chalice lighting today comes from a Navajo saying, "The mountains, I become part of it. The herbs, the fir tree, I become part of it. The morning mists, the clouds, the gathering waters, I become part of it. The wilderness, the dewdrops, the pollen, I become part of it."
So this is a service that's largely inspired by the Occupy movement. And so I figured for the call to worship, we'd do something that drew upon that experience. So in Occupy Wall Street at Zuccotti Park, because they couldn't use PA systems, so we'll practice that. So because they couldn't use PA systems, you can bring me down a little bit. What they did in order so that people could hear, they used something which they called the people's mic. And so when whoever was speaking, everyone who could hear them would repeat back the words that they had just said, so the people who were further out and couldn't hear could hear those words. So we're going to practice that. So we're going to use that here for our call to worship this morning. So the way it starts, the first thing I'll say, which you'll then repeat back to me, is mic check.
Mic check.
For the beauty of the earth.
For the beauty of the earth.
This spinning blue-green ball, yes.
This spinning blue-green ball, yes.
Gaia, mother of everything.
Gaia, mother of everything.
We walk gently across your back.
We walk gently across your back.
To come together again.
To come together again.
In this place.
In this place.
To remember how we can live.
To remember how we can live.
To remember who we are.
To remember who we are.
To create how we will be.
To create how we will be.
Gaia, our home.
Gaia, our home.
The lap in which we live.
The lap in which we live.
Welcome us.
Welcome.
As Justin mentioned, I came from the Bay Area, so that's where I was in 2011 when the Occupy movement first broke out. And you may have heard about it on the news because after the one at Occupy Wall Street, there was a lot of attention focused on what happened in Oakland, a lot of police crackdown, and made a lot of national news. So the big weekend after the police busted up the Occupy Oakland camp a second time, there was a big rally and a march. And while many listened to speakers and waved signs and banners or danced, there was a small group of people planting a community garden in front of City Hall. And it was a small act, unnoticed by many, but there was great significance contained within that garden. It was planted in a public space where the food would be free to anyone. It was local and organic. The garden was built by strangers working together for a common purpose. And lastly, the garden was life-affirming. Small green shoots growing out of dark, fertile soil. I invite you now to join me in a spirit of meditation or prayer. Spirit of life and love, God of many names, mystery beyond all naming, Help us to be reminded that new life and new possibilities spring ever eternal. This morning, let us plant something together, rooted in community, watered with spirit, and tended with love. Let us pull out the weeds of oppression that would choke it out, that it may blossom into a just and sustainable future. Amen, and blessed be. Ancient Mother, I hear you calling. Ancient Mother, I hear your song. Ancient Mother, I feel your laughter. Ancient Mother, I taste your tears. Join me. Ancient Mother, I hear you calling. Ancient Mother, I hear your song. Ancient Mother, I feel your laughter. Ancient Mother, I taste your tears. Once more. Ancient Mother, I hear you calling. Ancient Mother, I taste your song. Ancient Mother, I feel your laughter. Ancient Mother, I taste your tears.
Beans Green and Yellow by Mary Oliver. In the fall, it is mushrooms gathered in dampness under the pines. In spring, I have known the taste of lamb, full of milk and spring grass. Today, it is beans, green and yellow, and lettuce and basil from my friend's garden. How calmly, as though it were an ordinary thing, we eat the blessed earth.
A few months after helping plant that community garden in front of City Hall, I was working in the Occupy movement to highlight the connections between economic and ecological justice when I heard about Occupy the Farm. Now, this was exactly what I was looking for, an action that was a protest by virtue of being an act of creation, not only creating new life through planting, but helping to model a new way of life, which embodied my spiritual and social justice values. People and the planet over profit, community over consumerism, access to healthy, fresh food for anyone who needed it, not just those who could afford it. The kicker was that the farm we were planting was on University of California-controlled public land that was not accessible to the public. So when the university was first given this piece of land, there were over 100 acres of agricultural land, and now about 15 acres were left, and half of that was being sold to a private developer to build a retail center and grocery store with a senior housing facility that would cost residents between $3,000 and $5,000 a month, plus a big parking lot. So think about that, a grocery store being built on top of agricultural land. Just let that sink in for a second. So on Earth Day 2012, almost exactly 2 years ago, 200 people marched to the Gill Tract in Albany, California, where we gathered outside the gates. And one of the organizers, Gopal Dianeni, issued a call to action. If you have ever put your hands in the dirt, if you have ever pulled a weed, if you've ever planted a seed, if you've ever held a worm, you are a farmer. I'm ready to walk through that gate and take back the tract, because if it's the right thing to do, then we have every right to do it. With that, the gates were flung open, and we marched on and planted about 10,000 plants that day, almost 2 acres of land. Unlike much of the Occupy movement, which has often struggled to find a cohesive message or long-term goals, this was a highly structured action. 6 months in the planning, 15,000 plant starts had been grown in houses and greenhouses. 5 chickens were brought to the farm in mobile coops. People brought tools to till the soil, and it was tied into a 15-year campaign to preserve that land as a public agricultural resource. Although the sky was muted and gray and the wind was chilly, it was one of the most beautiful days I have ever seen. To see so many people of different ages and races, socioeconomic statuses and backgrounds working together for tangible systemic change. That first afternoon, dozens of local residents showed up excited by what was going on, and over the next few weeks, well over 1,000 people came by to help out or to learn more about planting and growing food. On that first Saturday, dubbed Family Farm Day, over 100 parents and their children learned how to plant corn, beans, tomatoes, and other crops. UC Berkeley professors held teach-out sessions. One visitor compared it to Michelle Obama's kitchen garden. Now, despite the significant but not universal community support, the University of California, or UC, wanted the farmers off the land. So when they shut the water off, local residents mobilized to fill large water tanks in order to continue watering, cultivating the crops. And when the UC locked the gates, we lifted large containers filled with water up and over the chain link fences. Upping the stakes, the UC threatened to use chemical agents on the farmers until parents at the elementary school directly across the street understandably freaked out. So even though negotiations between the farmers and the UC were making progress, with the farmers moving their encampment off of the tract, because it wasn't really about occupying the space so much as creating this community farm and allowing UC researchers access to plant their crops in the fields, the UC sent in almost 100 police clad in riot gear to secure the farm. They arrested 9 people, 2 of whom hopped the fence during the raid to water the plants. And the other 7 were arrested for unlawful assembly after refusing to leave the public sidewalk. So, knowing they had no legal case, the UC dropped all the charges. Aside from 2 people trespassing on public land, the farmers were guilty of nothing more than willful watering, prohibited planting, forceful farming, illegally irrigating, and malicious mulching. But their aggressive crackdown and legal intimidation had worked to shift the balance of power. The UC moved ahead with its development plan for the south side of the tract. And to give them credit, they only bulldozed 60% of the crops we had planted on the north side, and they even wrote a vague letter saying they would collaborate with the community on plans for the north side. But we were not about to give up either. And in early July, almost 100 people went back onto the land to weed and harvest the remaining 40 rows of crops we had planted. And over the following months, we harvested and distributed thousands of pounds of free food. But rather than getting bogged down in the details, and I admit I've glossed over several because I don't want to keep you here an hour and a half, I want to tell you why this is so important to me. And I think it's perhaps best captured with what I shared before the Albany City Council, when approximately 250 people packed the council meeting, the vast majority of whom were in support of the farm and opposed the development, which the council was voting to approve. I told the council that I had been bit by the gardening bug over 4 years ago and found gardening space wherever I could, in pots and small strips of soil. Lacking a house of my own, I built 5 raised beds in my parents' house, and when the garden had outgrown that, I started ripping up concrete to make more space. Because I was new to gardening, I relied upon books and the web to learn more about how to plant, and every year I was met with several pitiful or dead plants, typically caused by my lack of experience. I talked about the opportunity the Guild Track gave me to learn firsthand with people about who had the knowledge and experience of working on the land for a long time, that I in turn shared some of my own experience and my wisdom. And as awesome as it is to be able to Google planting a vegetable garden in the East Bay and get tens of thousands of results, it is no replacement for working next to an accomplished gardener. I told them about learning to pickle the cucumbers, squash, and beets that we had harvested, just like my grandparents and their grandparents before them. To me, that is what an urban farm on the Guild Track could be for thousands of people, a place to come and learn, to take the skills and knowledge back to their homes and neighborhoods, but perhaps most importantly, a place to build community. People working side by side, teaching each other, and feeding one another. I closed by telling the city council that, on the other hand, shopping at a grocery store wouldn't help build community. I've been shopping at a grocery store for years, and I have never made a friend at one. But I spent about 20 hours working on this land, and I made countless friends who continue to have deep relationships with today. That is what an urban farm on the Guild Track could be. So, a little while after I gave my speech, this developer came up to speak in favor of the development, and he had been yelling at the pro-farm speakers early in the night, and his patronizing tone kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So, I decided to head out into the hall and get a drink of water and stretch. And because the hall was well beyond capacity, they were broadcasting the meeting out in the hall where I was waiting. So I wasn't really listening to the speaker, but I overheard him say something about ministers speaking eloquently. And first off, I want to thank him for the praise for thinking that myself and my colleague were seminarians, despite identifying ourselves that he called us ministers, and for thinking that we were eloquent. But what he said stuck with me. He said, while those ministers were elegant and soared in heights with their aspirations, none of them are going to be spending money to pay the taxes that will send our kids to the schools so that we can pay our bills and do what we need to build our community. And to me, this is the crux of the issue. Many supporters want this because it's going to bring in tax dollars. And as someone who worked for a city councilwoman for 4 years, I understand this. Cities need revenue to pay for services. But people, particularly developers, love to exaggerate how a building project is going to bring in lots and lots of revenue. And it was no different this time. Despite the fact that there are already 5 grocery stores within 1 mile, proponents claim that this development was going to activate or revitalize the whole block. Now, in this case, revitalize means economic development, building new businesses, more shopping, more consumption. But let's take a look at the word revitalize. It means to give new life or vitality. What does it say about our society, about our way of thinking, when paving over green space, literally destroying life for development, passes as revitalizing? This mindset, based in uncontrolled consumption and endless industrial growth, are the biggest causes of the crises we find ourselves in today, and ones that are only getting worse. Global warming, rising food and energy costs, polluted ecosystems, and extreme economic disparity. A disparity even more extreme from a global perspective. It's a twisted logic that says continuing down this path can be considered revitalizing. To me, that is a spiritually bankrupt notion. Now, I realize it may not be as much of a stretch to advocate for reclaiming land for sustainable agriculture here in Northeast Ohio as it is in the San Francisco Bay Area. Aside from Detroit, there's probably no area with a more thriving urban agriculture movement than the Cleveland-Akron area. And there isn't exactly a shortage of vacant lots to be reclaimed for agriculture as a result of, you know, the trends of the West Belt, the Rust Belt. According to a recent paper published by researchers at Ohio State University, just by using 80% of the vacant lots in Cleveland, which are currently not doing nothing but looking ugly, Cleveland could generate between 22% and 48% of its demand for fresh produce and 25% for chicken and eggs. And that's just on 80% of abandoned lots. That's not to say anything about home properties or anything else or the surrounding areas. But some of you may still be thinking it's idealistic or even naive to think we can feed ourselves with locally grown food. Yet I don't see another option. Our industrial agricultural system is completely dependent on cheap oil, from gas-powered farm machinery to synthetic fertilizers and pesticides derived from oil and the gas to transport food from the farm to the or feedlot. Think planes flying halfway around the world to the factory and finally the supermarket. So as oil supplies continue to dwindle and prices rise, this system will inevitably break down. Yet, even if we had all the oil we could possibly want, the damage industrial agriculture is doing by reducing biodiversity and contributing to environmental degradation and climate change is completely unsustainable. And speaking of transportation, as a native Californian, I can't tell you how weird it is to see the amount of fruits and veggies and nuts in the grocery store at Giant Eagle or Mark's that say, grown in California. And with the massive drought that California is going through right now, farmers are cutting back on crops, crop planting between, 20 to 35%, and they're cutting down trees that won't grow back for years, if ever at all, considering the long-term water situation. And as the climate gets worse, I think relying upon California's produce to feed the nation will become increasingly risky. So can we feed ourselves on locally grown organic food? I don't know if it's possible, but emerging models like agroecology and permaculture give me hope, although they haven't really been widely adopted yet, largely because agribusiness hasn't figured out a way to profit off of them yet. But what I do know is that the longer we keep propping up this current system, the harder it's going to be to change, and the more disastrous it will be when it inevitably falls apart. A major part of our liberal religious legacy has been defined by incremental change. UU theologian Paul Razor writes, "Liberal religion has often come to the conclusion that revolution is unnecessary. The desired social changes will emerge in due course. So while Unitarians and Universalists often supported reform, and while their theologies and religious ideas often provided the justification for reform, liberals have tended to avoid reform that was too radical, or that threatened their privilege, or called them to give up something." The beauty and terror of this global crisis is that it leaves us with no option but a total revolution in our way of life. if we are to have a livable future. We have to rapidly shift away from a society based on endless industrial growth to building resilient local communities that can weather the coming storms. As much as we can to try to mitigate the problems, they're still coming. Even if we take immediate action now, I mean, we're already seeing it. We've already seen it. So we need to do it in community and offer this resilience in community, supporting each other through these tough and trying times and offering hope in the face of uncertainty. I have faith that we can create a livable future, but it will not be easy. So returning to the Gill Tract, at the end of their record-length city council meeting, where people spoke passionately in favor of preserving the land, the council voted to approve the development. And I latched on to those words about tax dollars and economic development being more important than public access to healthy food and land, and I started to get angry. The high aspirations of connection to the land, just communities, and life-giving systems that I and so many others had advocated for had been rejected. And I may have said something along the lines of, they're just worshiping at the altar of money and materialism. I was feeling like Jesus right before he started throwing the money changers out of the temple. Now, grandiose comparisons aside, that is what we're talking about here. Money and profit have become more important than community, than our connection to one another, more important than our connection to the environment, which sustains all life on this planet. At its core, the Occupy movement is a rejection of that idea. It says that the current system is destructive and perpetuates massive injustice. And while much of its energy was directed at challenging and dismantling the existing system, there are countless people working to create new life-giving systems as well. As Gopal Dayanani said of Occupy the Farm, the whole point of this is not to talk about what we want, not to demand what we want, but to make what we want real. So that summer and fall, as the farmers continued to harvest the crops at the Gill Tract, we ate some of it ourselves, but we also gave the food out for free on street corners and to groups like Food Not Bombs, which serves free food to people in need and in support of political organizing events. And we gave it to Fat Beats Produce, whose mission is to create a healthier and more equitable food system by closing the gap between small farmers of color that lack market outlets and urban communities that lack access to healthy, affordable, quality food, culturally appropriate food. And later that fall, the UC committed to preserving half of the tract for at least 10 years and establishing a center for urban agriculture because of the public pressure we applied and the dialogue we inspired. And on Earth Day, just a couple days ago, exactly 2 years after the initial occupation, 50 UC Berkeley students delivered a petition demanding a halt to the construction, and the UC agreed to halt construction on the planned community project until they meet with delegates of UC students and alumni, at least for a while. We'll see what happens with that, but I think even more exciting was just yesterday, community members joined UC Berkeley students in planting thousands of plants on a newly opened 1.5-acre plot on the tract, which will be used as a community farm, education, and research center for the wider community, which I'm really excited about and would be really great to go back to. So here in Northeast Ohio, Urban Hope, which is an active Unitarian Universalist presence in the Ohio City neighborhood of Cleveland, they maintain vegetable garden plot at the Kentucky School Community Garden and uses it to instruct children from the neighborhood school in gardening techniques and philosophy. And in the summer, Urban Hope sponsors a weekly garden club for neighborhood children who get to take home what they grow. It's groups like these and actions like these and so many more that are making a difference. But the power lies with you too. To borrow from the great documentary Food Incorporated, you can vote to change this system 3 times a day. Buy from companies that treat workers, animals, and the environment with respect. Ask your school board to provide healthy lunches. If you go to the supermarket, choose foods that are in season. Buy foods that are organic. Know what's in your food. Read labels. The average meal travels 1,500 miles from the farm to the supermarket. Buy foods that are locally grown. Shop at farmers markets or join a CSA, community-supported agriculture. Occupy unused land. Plant a garden, even a small one. Cook a meal with your family and eat together. Bring a local organic and or vegan dish to the next church potluck or come to another one of the potlucks that the Green Sanctuary is hosting. You can change the world with every bite you take and every seed you sow. In the story, Liam changes his whole city simply by deciding to tend one tiny, struggling garden. Yet, while his action is inspirational, it's actually the rest of the gardeners working together who transform, who truly transform the city. Now, I understand your congregation has recently purchased some of the surrounding properties and is beginning to explore plans for the land. And I would encourage you, as you do this, to keep in mind our seventh Unitarian Universalist principle of respect for the interdependent web as you do this. So just as an example, the First Church of Cleveland in Shaker Heights has a beautiful permaculture garden on their property. And in fact, my congregation is getting ready to kill off some grass next Saturday in order to plant a permaculture food forest on our campus. So I invite you to think about that, just planting a seed. And that is what planting a seed is, an act of hope, an act of hope, an active hope for a better future. May it be so. Mic check.
Mic check.
I believe that we can build a new way. Creating a future in which generations to come, live in peace, happiness, and security. Recognizing their place in the interdependent web.
Recognizing their place in the interdependent web.
This transition will not be smooth or easy.
This transition will not be smooth or easy.
The problems we face are huge. And our actions often seem inconsequential.
But everyone supporting each other
and making a change
adds up to something meaningful.
No one else is going to save us.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Amen. Blessed be. Go in peace.